Welcome to the Marriage Adventure Podcast, where the journey is the destination. It's the highs, the lows, and everything in between. Well, what's up, everybody? I hope you've had a great, great week. Today, we have a special, special podcast. And maybe you have some friends in your life that are friends. We say that there's friends that we have for a season that are in our lives for a short time. And then you've got friends that we call road friends, friends mm-hmm. that walk down the road of life with you. And then there's friends that you never see except once every 20 years or 10 years, but yet
you pick up right where you left off.
And so we have some of those friends with us today. Their names are Jeff and Jody Bumgardner. Say hello.
Hello.
Thank y'all for being with us today. We're
Thanks
so excited.
Thank you.
So we met, just a little bit of backstory here. We met Jeff and Jody in college, and Bonnie and I were dating. They were dating. Bonnie and I got married. They got married after that, just a little bit shortly after that, and called to ministry. We've been friends ever since, and about every 10 years we see each other. And,
or have a phone conversation.
Right.
But yet it's like it was yesterday that we hung out. And we always say, why don't we do this more? That's what we do. But Jeff is worship pastor at First Baptist Church in North Augusta, South Carolina. And he's also a sought-after clinician. And I'm sitting here looking at your shelf, and there's 7 Dove Awards. And Jeff's a songwriter. And if you're not familiar with what a Dove Award is, basically it's the Christian version of a Grammy. Is that pretty accurate?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sure. Sounds great.
Something like that. You're so humble. Basically, he's Rihanna. That's who he is. And so
just a little taller.
That's right. And maler. But anyway, so Jeff and Jody are here with us today.
And we're constantly here talking about the adventure that we're on in our marriage, and that we welcome the highs, but we rarely prepare for the lows. And Jeff and Jody, they've been married for 22 years, and they're going to talk with us today about something that none of us imagine when we set out on our marriage adventure today, and that's walking through loss together. Jeff and Jody, we're thankful that you're going to share your story with us, and just tell us a little bit about yourselves and your family.
Well, you mentioned the Dove Awards and songwriting and things like that, and every one of those has Jody's fingerprints all over them. There's no way, as a married couple and as a family, for one person to have success that's apart from the family dynamic and the support of a spouse, and that be a healthy relationship. Mm-hmm. And so for us, Jody has been very supportive of me and pursuing that dream and really that calling in ministry. And so every one of those, she's a big part of. In fact, her name should probably be on those in front of my name. But
and she's a musician as well.
She is a musician, degree
music education.
And she taught a little bit. And then when we started having kids, she stayed home to be mom and that's the role she's played that's been so healthy for our family. But we've been married for 22 years, and we did meet in college, shortly before college, but that's a different story. She remembers it, and I don't. so we don't talk about that a lot.
Right.
But that's another podcast.
Yes. But we met in college and became really the best of friends for the first year and a half. Somewhere along in our sophomore year, I got smart and decided to ask her out on a real date. And we started dating. We've been together ever since then. And 4 kids later and 22 years and 6 states that we've lived in together, kind of moving around, serving churches. We are seeing God do some amazing things in our life and in our marriage.
That's good.
Well, you guys have walked down a road the past few years that nobody can prepare for. Share with us kind of what happened.
So in October of 2016, it was a normal Wednesday night at church. We had even, we had gotten some of the kids. Our oldest, Caleb, was at a homecoming parade at school, and we had dropped Abby, our oldest daughter, off at praise team practice for that night. And then we went and grabbed dinner, Jeff and I and Ella and Ava.
And they were how old?
at the time, let's see, Ella was 10 and Ava was 6. So we usually, if Jeff was had enough time, we'd go grab dinner. So we went and grabbed Arby's that night and ate and came back to church. And he went on to choir, get things ready for choir rehearsal. And then I took Ava to her class, and then I walked Ella to her class. She was 10, but she was super shy, and she still wanted her mama to walk her to class every day. And so I dropped her off, and then I went to choir. You know, it was just a normal Wednesday night. And then I left. I had to leave to pick Caleb up from his homecoming parade, so I had to leave a little early. And then Jeff, the rest of the kids, the girls, were at the church with Jeff until choir practice ended. And so, Jeff, I'll let you share this part because since you were there.
Yeah, so Ella, her responsibility at the end of Wednesday night class was to go by and pick up her younger sister, Ava. And they would hang out together until I was out of choir rehearsal, and then we'd bring them home. And that night, Ella did that. She went by and picked up Ava, and they came down and went in the restroom, and Ava left the restroom first to go out to play. And when Ella came out, she was holding her head and crying and calling for Ava. So Ava went over to her, and she started telling her head was hurting. And our oldest daughter, Abby, was in the courtyard just outside that area, and she could see through the glass door Ella crying. So she came in, and I was asking her what was wrong. And by that point, that quickly, Ella couldn't see. She had lost her sight. Well, Jody struggles with migraines from time to time, and the girls were aware of that. So Abby instantly thought it's a migraine. She's having her first migraine. So she took her to this little dark area where there were some couches and helped her lay down on the couch. And it wasn't too long after that that Ella couldn't function her arms and just, you know, her motor skills. And so they sent for me, and my secretary came to the door and called my name. And I was rapping. We had just finished choir rehearsal, but I was standing around talking with some of the people. And so I instantly knew something was wrong. So I ran out, and she said, "It's Ella." So I ran out and found her not far from the choir room where she had actually rolled off the couch, and they had caught her and just laid her down on the floor. And she couldn't track with me. Her eyes were just staring off. And so I was speaking to her, and I was like, "Baby, where are you hurting?" And she was trying to move her arms to show me, but she couldn't point. She was losing that motor skill. And so I said, "Is it your stomach?" And she just kept pointing or trying to point. And so I said, "Is it your head?" And she gave me a thumbs up. And so I started thinking, okay, is it something with the brain? Is she having a seizure? Is there, you know, I just had no idea. Yeah. And so I just leaned down and started telling her, "You're not by yourself. I'm right here. I love you. I love you." She gave me a thumbs up. So that was comforting to me. And now to look back on that moment and know that she heard her dad's voice and knew she wasn't laying there alone. And so we called paramedics, and they got there rather quickly and got her to the ambulance and on the way to the hospital. So I let my oldest daughter, Abby, ride with her so she wouldn't be alone, because I had the car and I still had the little one and all that. Yeah. We were trying to get everybody in the ambulance and to the hospital. So I took the car and followed behind. And when we got to the hospital, she had stopped breathing. So they were trying to resuscitate her. They had a bag, an oxygen bag. They were trying to keep her breathing. And so by the time Jody got there, we had made a call to her. By the time she got to the hospital, they were beginning to intubate her. And not knowing what had happened, and they had no answers. They were just trying to keep her alive. And so not long after that, they ran her upstairs. Once they stabilized her, they ran her upstairs for a CT scan and discovered there was bleeding in her brain. And there had not been a fall or anything like that. We had clarified that already with our other two girls. And so, and they said there didn't seem to be head trauma. There was just a brain bleed. And so they were assuming it might be a tumor, but they wanted to look at the scans a little closer. And we're thinking, a tumor? She's been healthy. We've never had any issues. And they soon came back and said it was an AVM, which is an arteriovenous malformation in the brain that's develops in utero. And so
Is it similar to an aneurysm?
Or is it is. Yeah, it creates the AVM is kind of a bundle of veins and arteries, and that constant pounding over 10 years from those arteries into those veins created some weak spots, which then the aneurysm created some aneurysms there, and one of them had burst, and it was located near the brainstem, which is why she was losing a lot of her facility so quickly.
Mm. Yeah, and because of the AVM was so massive, when the aneurysm ruptured, it was such a large area that it damaged. Mm.
And they rushed her into surgery to try and relieve the pressure on the brain and to drain off some of the bleeding. And they just started telling us, looking at this, and they were showing us the scan while she was in surgery, and they were saying, this is catastrophic. Mm-hmm. We're really dealing with something very serious here, so prepare yourself for the worst. So for us, just 30 minutes earlier, our lives were normal.
Yeah.
You know,
within a scope of 30 minutes, you go from she's a healthy 10-year-old out to dinner to this.
Yeah. And speaking of dinner, just on a side note, that night Jody had called me. She said, "Hey, I'm taking Ella and Ava to dinner. Can you go with us?" And I said, "I really don't have time. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get ready for a rehearsal." And I heard Ella in the background going, "Daddy, no, go to dinner with us." And so I gave in.
Good for you.
And what a treasure to me now to know I had that. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You know, and it's made me a lot more aware since then. You know, mm-hmm. to seize the moments while you have them. You know, we were talking yesterday because we are buddies. We kind of been hanging out, having a good time yesterday and last night and even this morning. But we were talking about how the days are long, but the years are short. Mm-hmm. And so you miss a lot of opportunities if you're not careful. And that's one opportunity I'm glad that the Lord did not allow me to miss that night. But, it was they lost her twice during surgery. They were able to bring her back and brought her up to the room where we were waiting for her, and they told us now it's just a waiting game, just to see how she responds to the surgery and if the bleeding is going to stop.
Where was your level of hope in that moment?
I would say it was still pretty high at that point. There were a few moments. At that moment, it was still high. Once, and I think I have mentioned this to you, but once they, you know, because they would come in and check her eyes, and for a while I avoided looking at that, but then, you know, while the level of hope was high, and of course we prayed the whole time for a miracle till the last second, but I will say, and Jeff and I didn't talk about this until after everything was over, but when I looked in her eyes, I felt like she was gone.
Yeah. Mm.
And so at that point, while I was still praying, I would definitely say hope for recovery was definitely changed, because I did feel like her spirit was gone.
It was gone.
Which is very hard to explain and describe, because it wasn't like I gave up hope.
Right.
But yet, you know, I mean, I was praying, you know, send her back, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
We believe in the God of miracles.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So we know if God can save us, that's the biggest miracle of
all
time.
Yeah.
He
created
her. He made her. He can do anything. So I was like,
do
send
it.
Her back.
Do it now.
Exactly. Yeah. So we were praying for that miracle. And the miracle, what it looked like to us, was Ella back normal and healthy.
Right.
And that's what we were praying for God to do the miraculous. And we promised so many things, you know, and begging him for that. Lord, we'll tell her story and we'll make much of you and all of that. And it was not long. They told us they were going to have to do a test to see if she had any brain activity. And with children, they do two tests, and it's done by two separate doctors on two separate shifts, 12 hours between the two examinations to make sure there's no brain activity or that there is. And she failed the first test, telling us there was no brain activity whatsoever. And so we started looking at what are our options. And I remember we had been praying for this miracle, and we decided to walk the hall a little bit and just to talk a little bit about, okay, what options do we have left? And as we're walking the hospital hall, we're kind of looking along the rooms and seeing other parents in similar situations praying for miracles for their kids. Mm-hmm. And we started talking about organ donation. And we said, if she fails that second test, maybe our miracle isn't what we think we want it to be. Maybe God's miracle in this situation is that Ella becomes the miracle for one of these other kids.
And that's 24 hours later, after the initial impact.
Yeah. And so we're still not ready to give up, but we're thinking, okay, once they declare her, if she fails that second test, we have no more options.
Right.
So we need to make a decision. And so we asked to speak to someone, and they had already come by and shared with us these options. And so we asked to speak with someone and with LifeLink of Georgia, and we told them if the second test was negative, that we wanted her to be someone else's miracle.
Yeah. We felt like at that point, we were like, that's not an option. And that is something that we have no regrets, not a second of regret from any of that, because it's amazing that she, I mean, these people would not be here if it weren't for her. And part of her is here. Yeah. And, you know, we've talked about that. God created Ella. He made her, you know, and while those things are helping someone else live, they're still Ella's, you know, so that's part's really cool to me.
And you had an opportunity to meet some of those people.
Two of them.
Wow.
We hope, we pray we are able to meet all of them.
Yeah. There are four that we're aware of that received life-giving organs from her. Two different people each received a kidney. One person received a liver, and then another person received her heart and lungs. Mm-hmm. And we've met one of the kidney recipients. His name is Joshua, and he lives in New Orleans area, and he's a singer-songwriter.
Oh, no
kidding.
He's
an amazing musician.
Which has been really
cool.
No
kidding.
So God gave our family another musician. Yeah. And, and then a young lady named Stephanie, who lives in Miami, Florida, received the heart and lungs, and she's been here to visit us, and she came to Thanksgiving one year with her family.
Yeah, she surprised Jeff, I knew.
Surprised
me.
Really?
Oh, wow. Surprised me the first time, and then she surprised Jeff.
Yeah, so we look at that. One of the things, too, that I want to offer your audience and those that we speak with and share our story with is that we're never without hope. When things seem the darkest, when things seem the most hopeless, God is still God, and God is still faithful. The same God who is God when the sun's shining and we're on the mountaintop is the same God who's in the valley with us. Mm. And we definitely were in our darkest moments during this whole thing, and God was still faithful to us, even when we couldn't see it, even when we were questioning and didn't understand. And we still don't have all of our answers, and we never will. We'll never fully wrap our minds around the why. We can see certain little things, but the full why of why God chose to allow her to come home, we'll never understand. But we've also realized that we don't have to have the answers, that's not what faith is. Faith is trusting even when you don't have the answers. And so that's where our faith comes from. And if we can, as I mentioned earlier, if we can trust God with our eternal salvation, and we can trust him with moments like this as well, and know that his plans are bigger than our plans, his ways are higher than our ways, and his thoughts. So,
and
so,
I'm excited for the day when I get there and I get to see all the things that her life did.
Wow. The ripple effect.
That I can't see yet, but it'll be like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, just thing after thing. I'm excited for that.
So I want to get into that in a minute, but as a pastor and as you know, a pastoral counselor, when you, and you guys have dealt with this at your church, Jeff, when people experience grief or loss, a natural thing for people to do is we tend to rank our grief. You know, well, I lost my person this way, I think that's the worst way, or my person went through a long battle of this. And I think one thing we've all determined is there's just no good way to lose anybody, young or old, quick or short or long, you know. But I think one thing that everybody agrees on is that the loss of a child is tops right there, is one of the worst. You talk about this hope. How quick, and we'll focus this in, being a marriage podcast, how quickly did you guys get there, and what was the process as as a couple of walking through this and experiencing that hope together?
Because there are a lot of couples who don't survive what you've walked through.
No.
I noticed with us early on, and I think this was just purely God in us working through that situation, that it was like I would be having a breakdown, but he was strong at that moment. Mm-hmm. And then when he would be having a breakdown, I was strong at that moment. And it wasn't, I don't know that that was like a conscious choice. I feel like that God just, that was like a gift in the beginning, mm-hmm. that we were able to help each other, because it just, they never seemed to land at the same time. Mm-hmm. I also will say, I know like as time has gone on, that we recognize the triggers for each other. And also we're very, you have to be understanding of, like, he could be wanting to talk about it at a certain time, you know, cause sometimes you just can't sometimes. Yeah. And I've noticed like there's been some times when he'll be talking about something and I just, at that moment, I emotionally just cannot. And I'll just say, Jeff, I can't talk about that right now.
And we've given each other that room.
Yeah. A lot of grace.
Huh? A lot of grace. And he's like, it's okay. Because he needed to talk about it, but he understands just at that moment, I can't, and vice versa. And that's been something you know, you have to step outside of yourself and say, I understand you at this moment can't. And then later we're able to talk about it.
Yeah. But, and having said that, you also have to be careful too that you do have the open communication.
Mm. Oh, for sure.
So, because I could quickly replace her with someone else to confide in and to be my listening ear, mm-hmm. if I felt like bringing that to her is really upsetting her too much. And so I'm just not going to talk to her at all. I'm not going to bring it up at all. And I'm going to share this grief with someone else. And that can be very damaging to your relationship. So while it is good to have a buddy or a friend or someone that you can talk to, you have to continue to come back to one another.
That's
because if not, it will divide you, and then you're confiding in others as opposed to one another. Mm-hmm. And I understand too, and she understands this about me, we're never going to remind the other of what we've lost. We already know that.
That's right.
We're already there.
Give us an example of how that can happen, because I feel like that probably happens a lot with people.
And confiding in others, or
no, reminding each other what?
Yeah. So we lost Ella. I mean, she's not here.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm never going to be able to bring that up to her in such a way that it reminds her. It's a constant for us. Okay. It's our every moment. It's our every day. And so we've talked, and we have to, and we know, for each other that, that the open line of communication has to be there for us. And though one moment, one of us may not be ready to talk about it in that moment, it may be upsetting us or emotional. We also understand that the next moment we need to talk and to give each other that grace, but at the same time that goes both ways. And so while she may not be able to talk about it one moment, she knows that I need to talk about it.
Right.
So she finds that moment where she brings it back up to me
and
back and forth.
Well, and you both, everybody processes loss in a different way, and you've got different personalities, but you also are living in a home with three more children who are trying to process the loss. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, the kids definitely have all processed it. Really, all three are completely different. Caleb is different in the way that he will talk about it, but only when he's ready, but then it is something that he seems comfortable sharing and talking about how he's feeling, but it's rare. It's rare when he wants to talk about it, but then he will. Caleb also, I think, was ours who had maybe more regrets. He and Ella were the two, although they were far apart in age, you know, they like to push each other's buttons, which could be humorous, but frustrating for them, but, you know, it was entertaining, but, you know, but then for him, you know, cause he would get so frustrated with her, and then he feels those like regrets from that. Mm. And then
from being a typical big brother,
exactly, which is normal. And we've all, And then, Abby is ours, who definitely holds everything in. So for her too, she avoid, hers is, I don't want to say avoidance, but she'll avoid things that were like the things that they did together. In some sense, like for example, because Arby's, that was where we ate on that Wednesday night. Abby didn't even eat the meal with us. She was at Praise Team rehearsal. But to this day, she will not eat at Arby's. Mm. Wow. You know, so for her, and I don't completely understand that, but yeah. for her, that's what she needs to do. So that's what we do. We don't even try to go to Arby's if she's with us. Mm. There's a, like, I think the last restaurant we ate at for Ella's birthday, we had gone
her
to.
Her 10th birthday.
Her 10th birthday. We went, and she wanted ribs. So we, the place we ate, she.
A 10-year-old who loves ribs.
Oh, yeah, loved. Oh, yeah, and she could clean it to the bone. Like that and chicken legs, yeah. So it grossed me out. I was like, I don't think that's all meat, but okay. but yeah, but like Abby does, like she refuses to eat. There's things like that for her. She actually had a hard time going to the cemetery. She didn't want to get out of the car.
And still does.
And she still does. This past Christmas, she did come out, and I told, you know, we've, so for her, at first it was, we were worried, and we were like, you need to do this to help you. And then we realized, you know, this is how she's handling it. So for her, like when we would go put things out on Christmas Eve, it kind of was like, it's fine, you can stay in the car. And then like this last Christmas Eve, I was starting to put stuff out, and she came up, and she was like, you know, and she's my, like, organized planner type personality. Yeah. And so she came up and took the stuff. She was like, here, let me do it, you know. So I said, okay, you know. And so you just kind of, as, you know, time goes on, you know, because it's been, that was, what, our third Christmas, this last one. So, you know, it's progress, you know, for her. And then Ava was six at the time. So for her, it was
They were close.
Oh, yeah.
They shared a room, too, didn't they?
They shared a room. Uh-huh. They actually shared a bed. They had bunk beds, but every time Ella would fall asleep, Ava would climb up there and get in the bed with her. So, yeah. And Ava was ours. I don't know if we shared this, but in the hospital, Ava had the hardest time becoming comfortable with seeing Ella in the bed with the tubes and everything. And so she wouldn't get near her for a while, but then and even like that first day, we couldn't, it had to be very quiet. We couldn't touch her really very much other than like her hand or really gently because they were hoping the bleeding would stop. But once Friday, I believe, after they did the first test, that's when they started, you know, you could, well, honestly, it was my favorite time with her in the hospital was when we were able to lay with her in the bed because Ella's favorite thing was snuggle time. Mm-hmm. And so even at 10, you know, sometimes she'd come home from school and she's like that sweaty kid smell and she wanted to be all up on you and you're like, okay, that's all I can take. You're going to have to move over. But no, she loved that. And so in the hospital, being able to lay with her was our favorite. And so Ava, you know, I remember we let her touch her hand and then she got comfortable getting a little closer. And then finally she got up in the bed with her and laid with her. And they had, Ella's hair had been in a ponytail. And so they had it laid over the back of the hospital bed. And so, of course, Ava wanted her hair like Ella's. And so we put her hair up and we laid it over and we actually have some really cute pictures and she's just smiling because she doesn't really understand at that point what was going on so much. And so it's, you know, just good memories. I know that sounds weird maybe, but it was some sweet memories that we got in there. But anyway, yeah, they've got some funny, Ava loves to tell the story of that we didn't know this was going on, but they pretended that the floor, Ella told in their bedroom, Ella had told Ava that the floor was hot lava. So they could only jump from furniture to furniture, which was kind of scary. They're jumping off the top of the bunk bed onto the dresser.
Explains the noise that was going on.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, they were like best buds. Yeah. And so,
So navigating that among kids, understanding each one of them lost a sister, but each one of them lost a different relationship.
That's right.
So whereas Abby had a close relationship with Ella in some ways, Ava, it was her everyday playmate.
Yeah.
And even with Jody and myself, we both lost a daughter, but we both lost a different relationship.
That's
she
right.
was a daddy's girl. And so for me, I lost that bonding, that daddy and daughter and Jody lost a different relationship, though it was a mom-daughter relationship, a parent-child relationship. Mm-hmm. What they had was different from what I had with Ella. Mm-hmm. And so understanding that among the two of us, understanding that with the other kids, trying to give them room.
Well, and like Abby has even said, you know, how like how we looked at, because that was when it happened, how Ella and Ava were, that was Abby and Ella a few years earlier.
Just reversed.
You know,
yeah.
Ella was the little sister, and Abby was kind of like a second mom. But, I mean, they had shared a room when they were younger, and so
it sounds
similar.
Like when it comes to all of this, whether it's with your kids or whether it's with each other through the grief time, that the word grace has got to be there.
Yes.
Grace for allowing. I think we all have expectations of other people for everything, and probably even in grieving and in mourning, that my expectation is you process it this way, or I can, even expectations of ourselves, how we're going to get through it. And it sounds like the ability to have grace to you process it the way God created you, and based upon your relationship with her and your grace with each other. And it just sounds like that's kind of the ribbon that runs through all of this healing.
Yes.
You know, together.
Well, not all of our listeners have walked through the loss of a child, which I can't even fathom, but tragedy is no respecter of persons, and grief finds all of us at some point because it's part of the process of life, and we lose people, we lose love, we lose jobs, or whether it be betrayal or loss of health, or a lot of things that we lose in life, and you have to go through the grieving process. And Jeff, you've recently co-authored a book with your pastor, Dr. Stephen Cutchins, is that correct? Entitled Green Hearts, and Ella loved the color green. And
she did.
Green Hearts, God's Goodness in the Worst of Times. And Jeff, in the book, there was a quote in there that said, tragedy is like a dark passenger that victoriously reminds us there are things outside of our control. However, in the midst of tragedy, it's essential to understand that we have options. Although it seems as though control is completely taken out of our hands, options remain. I love that. Can you talk a little bit about what options you're left with when something like this happens?
Yeah. What I meant by that is grief is always there. It's a constant. It's something that if the Lord gives me the grace to live till I'm 90 years old, I will forever grieve the loss of Ella. And so it's not going away. It's there. But all of our options aren't removed from us. And the options are, we can choose to allow that loss to break us and to defeat us, and we can live buried beneath that loss on a daily basis. Or we can choose to honor the loss. And by honoring the loss, then you're able to tell Ella's story. You're able to celebrate who she was and who she continues to be. And we had to look at it one of two ways. We could look at it as, look at everything that we lost. Or we could look at it as, man, we had a front row seat to 10 years.
That's right.
A whole decade.
It's all about your perspective.
It's right. Perspective. Yeah. And perspective is everything in a situation like this, where you can, whether you're going to be defeated or be victorious. And we've said this.
I'm like, some days I have to make that choice every minute. It's not like, okay, today I'm going to be joyful and look at it positively. Like, sometimes it's just, you have to, I'm choosing this way.
Taking every thought captive.
Yes.
To make it obedient.
And sometimes there are a lot more thoughts.
Every thought.
Yeah. Yeah. Every thought. Yeah.
So while it seems easier said than done, and that's the truth of it, it still has to be our focus.
Yeah.
I'm the type that I have to have a target on the wall. If I don't have a goal set in front of me, or target or something that I'm shooting for, I miss every time.
Yeah.
And so I have to have that in front of me as well. And I think it's something that helps us to not only process the grief, but to not allow that self-defeat to happen over and over and over again, because that becomes a cycle. And that cycle is unhealthy for us to walk in and to live in. And at the same time, I don't want to make this sound like this happens day one and we're all good, mm-hmm. and you know, things change and you just think positive thoughts and you're going to be fine. Yeah. I don't mean it in that way. Everybody's grief is different. Everyone grieves differently, and that time frame is a little different for all of us as mm-hmm. well. However, it can be the end goal that we shoot for, and it's got to be something that we're aiming for on a daily basis. And through that, we've been able to see other people impacted by Ella's story. If we have been defeated by it, then we keep the story to ourselves, mm-hmm. and Ella dies every day. Mm-hmm. But we want Ella to live every day. She only had 10 years to impact this world, and we want people to know that she was here. Mm. Yeah. And if we're going to be able to tell her story, then we have to be willing to live that story out, and that can't be done in that dark area of defeat.
Tell us a little bit about the way that story is living on. There's some pretty cool stuff that it's happening.
Yeah, so it's living on through people like Joshua and Stephanie, who received organs from her, who tell her story. But it's also living out through our willingness to speak into the lives of others as others experience loss. And Bonnie, as you mentioned a moment ago, loss is loss, and grief accompanies every loss mm-hmm. to some degree. That can be the loss of a job, loss of a friend, loss of some mm-hmm. kind of relationship, the loss of a daughter. Mm-hmm. And we have to be willing to process that, and then through that to be able to speak truth into other people's lives through that. So one of the ways, Daniel, that's happening through us is Jody's speaking at some women's conferences and telling Ella's story and telling our story as a result of that, which is outside her comfort zone.
That's not something.
She's a behind-the-scenes person, but but she's having opportunities come to her, and she's stepping into those shoes, and she's telling Ella's story through that. We also have Ella's Gift, which is an organization that we we're in the process right now of establishing that 501c3 this year. And through Ella's Gift, we began it almost immediately after Ella's passing.
Really soon.
We had mm-hmm. a friend of ours come to us, Emily Kreider, and she kind of had the vision, and she shared with us kind of her thoughts and wanted to know if that was something we would want to do. And what it is basically partnering with the Children's Hospital of Georgia, where Ella was a patient. And we really developed relationships with her doctor and nurses in that time. And we really have a heart for that hospital, knowing there are kids like Ella there every day. Mm-hmm. And they're shut away from the rest of us. If our lives don't take that certain journey, we don't even realize their worlds are crumbling right behind those walls. Wow. And so Ella's Gift is our organization that we gather. We have these little insulated lunch boxes. They're green because that was Ella's favorite color. Mm-hmm. She loved hearts, and so there are hearts on the bag, and it's words like bravery and courage and strength, hope yeah. and strength mm-hmm. and those things on the bag. And there's a card in the front of the bag that has her picture and tells her story. And it says, you're receiving this gift because of people who care for you and and love you and don't even know your name, but we're praying for you, and we want to encourage you with this gift. And inside are things that kids love: crayons, coloring books, and stickers, and little games, and a little New Testament that we put in there as well. And we're hearing the stories of these kids getting bags, and many of them come into the hospital as patients, and they're asking now, am I going to get an Ella's Gift?
Oh, yeah.
And it's really cool for us. And we'll hear from some of the parents sometimes, some of the nurses in relationship with the parents, who'll send us a picture of the kid with the bag. Or we'll hear from, we heard from a teacher who's in our church who got the parents' permission to send us a picture of their kid who actually recovered in the hospital and showed up at school with his Ella's Gift bag.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm.
Who took it to school with him because it became such a comfort for him when he was a patient. And if we can just speak hope and life into one of the scariest moments of a child when they're in the hospital, that's what we want to do, and that's what Ella's Gift is all about. We lost Ella physically, but we didn't lose the spirit of Ella mm-hmm. and the gift that God gave the world the day she was born. And over 10 years now, we can share that with people mm-hmm. on a daily mm-hmm. basis. And so not everybody can put together a 501c3, and not everybody needs to, mm-hmm. Depending on their loss. But everybody can find a way to honor the loss. And I learned that from a friend of mine long before we lost Ella, whose mom had passed away to cancer. And he had just suffered such depression through his grief, and he'd gone to counseling, which we encourage as well for people to find a Christian counselor who can speak life into them and be that listening ear and counsel them on what God's word says and walking through their situation. But he lost his mom, and he had a grief counselor share with him to find a way to honor the loss. Mm-hmm. And he does it in the simplest way. His mom loved bubbles. Of all things. And so he lives on the coast of California. And so when he's having those moments, he goes down to the beach and just blows bubbles. Mm. And he honors the loss of his mom in that way, because it was a special bond that they had, and just blowing bubbles for special occasions, birthdays and Christmas and different things. And so he goes down and just remembers her in that way. Mm. So you can start a 501c3 and take collections, and or you can just go blow bubbles and just find your thing that works for you, that honors whatever your loss is, and let that be the thing that carries you through those dark moments.
And I think it's so vital and important, because if you don't find that way to honor that loss, I think the tendency is you either do one of two things. You either become a stuffer and you stuff it down, or you get stuck. And there's a lot of our tendency is I get stuck in my grief, meaning I can't move their shoes. I can't move anything around in the house, or anything they touched or breathed on or did.
Right.
Because that'll dishonor that person. And this is our first time in your house since then. And just looking around, I mean, I'm looking at a little station that you got set up with little memory things of her. And it's perfect. And then at the kitchen table where Ella's seat was is her big bear.
Yeah.
With a little, I think, a very fitting crown on top.
So
that bear eats all the meals with you.
Exactly.
And so you don't have an homage set up that you don't, but you have memories. And I think that's very honoring to her. Mm-hmm. And she's very much alive in your house.
Yeah.
And last night, you know, we all sat around and just chatted and had a great time as we talked about her, your other kids, our kids. She's very much alive in the conversation.
Yeah.
And Bonnie and I were going to bed last night, and we said, it's amazing you guys are still Jeff and Jody from 20 years ago in college.
Yeah.
And yet you're so much more than that.
Yeah.
And the fact that you guys have walked with Christ through this and with each other through this has allowed Christ to take who he created you to be in your sense of humor and just silliness. You know, that's basically what we are when we all get together.
Yeah, yeah,
and, and he's just added a depth and a richness to that that's made it even more wonderful. Mm-hmm. And that's honoring her life.
Yeah, I think one of the things with that, we hold on to 2 Corinthians 1, 3 and 4, that I'm paraphrasing here, but that we walk through things, and with the same grace that we've received from God, we can share with others in their situation, so that we share the story of Ella. And one of the things that was a little bumpy for us is people who weren't aware of Ella's story, when they would meet us, would say, now, how many kids do you have? Well, what do you say? Do you go into the whole story of, well, we have three kids, but we used to have four.
Sure.
No, we have four kids.
Yeah.
We have four kids.
It's and I'll same. Always yeah. know that.
Yeah. And
because
then
I do.
Yeah. And then we'll explain. We have, these are their ages, and we had one who was 10, and she would be 13 now, and she passed away when she was 10 years old. And sometimes that opens the door to tell a story, but it doesn't always have to. Mm-hmm. That's not our purpose. Mm-hmm. Our purpose is honoring her. She will forever be one of our kids.
And I think in the process of honoring her, I was telling Jody last night, I was amazed the night we came, when we came to the viewing that night, that in my hurt for you, for both of you, I was so overwhelmed with the way that Jody almost ministered to me. Mm-hmm. That y'all have this heart to love people, and it just comes out of you. Even in your grief, you were giving. And it blew me away, because Daniel and I mean, we've been in ministry for as long as you guys have.
Yeah.
And we've walked through hard things. We've walked with others through hard things. But it was probably the first time, even after losing my dad unexpectedly and the people in my life, that it was the first time I struggled in my faith because of my hurt towards the Lord at what had happened to
you guys. The first time God was a stumbling block in our faith.
Yes.
Something that he did. was a stumbling block.
Yeah.
But being there with you guys that night, it blew me away how I left comforted by you when I was intending to go to comfort you. That God has used you guys even from the, and it's just his grace carrying you, and it's very evident, but how he could even use you to minister to those who came to comfort you. Mm-hmm. It blew me away. Yeah. And how he continues, as you share her story, that it ministers to people, that you've put together resources, a book that can help people walk through loss. And I can't even talk about the song that you, the songs and the things that God has birthed out of this loss that is breathing life into people.
Jeff, tell us about the song.
The song's called Empty Chair, and it's based on what we've already referenced with the bear sitting in her chair in there. Is that the bear is there not because the bear has any certain significance other than that it belonged to Ella, but we just couldn't stomach looking at an empty chair every
that
night when we'd gather together as a family for
hard.
Dinner.
Yeah.
So that just got me thinking about that empty chair and how many families face that on a daily basis. And so I wrote the song. And it's a very real and honest and raw song. I didn't want to dress it up and make it sound pretty or anything, that I'm okay with the loss, because I'm not, and I never will be. So I wrote the song called Empty Chair, and we pitched it around to a few artists. At first I wrote it just for me and for our family. But then as I would share about the story of the song with others, people started encouraging me to pitch it to some artists. And it had some holds, some artists who were interested in it. But at the end of the day, I just realized, you know, this is our song and I need to record it. So I did, and we released it to radio. And the whole purpose in releasing it, we released it on her birthday last year, March 1st of 2019. And all the proceeds from the song go towards Ella's gift. But the song itself simply speaks of, you know, I stare at every picture wishing somehow I was with you, but things are just not the way they used to be. That we gather as at the table with our family, and all we can see is this empty chair. But the chorus goes on to say, I can almost hear you laughing and see that pretty smile. And I know that I'll be with you in just a little while. I imagine as you gather at the table with the king, there's an empty chair sitting right beside you that you have saved for me.
I love it.
And so just the turn in that and looking at an empty chair and going, you know, we have an empty chair here, but there's an empty chair waiting for me right there at the Lord's table. Sure. And one day we're going to fill that. And that's the hope of not only the message of the song, but the message of our faith in Christ, to know that he didn't save us for a moment. He saved us for all of eternity.
I want to ask a quick question. What did you do? Because that happened. Y'all were married around 18 years or so when that happened, probably, or something like that, 17, 18. What do you think you did in the 17, 18 years prior to that in your relationship with each other, in your marriage, that helped carry you through this and will continue?
This is where you tell them how great I am.
What did we do?
I think one of the things is that we honored our family by honoring our God. I think to the best of our ability, and we didn't get that perfect or anything like that, but we raised our family, our kids, to know who God was. And the reason mom and dad love each other the way that we love each other is because we love our God together as a family and honor one another in the Lord. I think that's one of the things that we got right. A lot of things we got wrong, but I think one of the things that we got right, and we've kept communication open. We've had bumps in the road that life throws you, and every time, again, Bonnie, you mentioned a moment ago about choices and options, and you always have the option of allowing a bump in the road that's going to come to everybody. I don't care who you are. I don't care how spiritual you are or not. Life is not a smooth ride. And when those bumps come, you have the option of allowing those bumps to drive you apart or drive you together. And we've always chosen to allow those things to drive us closer to one another. And your kids see that, whether or not you even realize they're watching. And sometimes we didn't realize they were, but they were. And I remember Ella coming to us earlier that year, and I don't remember how close in proximity to the time that this all happened this was, but I remember it was just a matter of months. And she, I don't know, Jody, if you even remember this, but she came to us and she was talking about friends of hers in her class and how many of them came from divorced homes and how many of their parents were, would they be living with a step parent and or just a single mom or single dad. And she asked us, and that she said, please don't ever get divorced. And so that's one of the things that she recognized about us is that mom and dad were here and loved one another. And so when this happened, we did what we've always done, and we just it drove us closer to one another, and we were able to pick up the pieces together.
I always say we don't naturally drift towards good. Mm-hmm. If we drift, we drift away, and so we have to make that conscious effort spiritually, mm-hmm. mentally, emotionally, as a couple, to lean in, to drift back towards each other. Not drift, but consciously.
Paddle hard.
With a lot of work, paddle yeah. hard back towards each other. It's kind of like when you go out in the ocean, you drift away from your hotel down the line.
Yeah. You do.
And if you keep that, if you just allow life to take you, you're going to drift apart. And so that conscious effort of leaning in to each other, to Christ, in good and bad, it sounds like is what carried you guys yeah. through and is still carrying you through this now.
And selflessness, like we've talked about that a lot, especially now that our kids are getting older and they're yeah. dating and all yeah. that. And love in itself is selfless, like thinking of the other person first. So I think that's something we both consciously try, like even if we're yeah. upset with each other about something, we try to, you know, think about the other person and, I mean, you just, some things it's like, okay, I want this, but is it really that important? Or, you know, and you try to look at it from the other person's point of view and just be selfless.
Yeah, we all face something with our own personal perspective, whatever that is, a relationship, a loss, an opportunity. And it's going outside of our own perspective and trying to see things from your spouse's point of view. Changes your perspective. Mm-hmm. And so if we truly believe in, hey, I love you and you're my person, then that needs to be your constant. It has to be, like you say, drifting down the shoreline away from your beach umbrella. You've always got to constantly have your eyes on that thing that's going to bring you
that
home.
Fixed point.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. That's good. Well, before we leave today, would you please tell anybody that's listening how we can find your book and your song, if it's available, and how they can be part of Ella's gift and how we can follow you?
Yeah, thanks for that, Bonnie. We the song is called Empty Chair by Jeff Bumgardner, and you can find that on iTunes, CD Baby, Amazon Music. And the book is called Green Hearts by Jeff Bumgardner and Dr. Stephen Cutchins, and that's everywhere books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Mm-hmm. You can find it online as well as in the stores. And you can find my music page. Jeff Bumgardner Music is on Facebook, mm-hmm. And our story with Ella. We have a blog called forella.org, forella.org is our blog. But we also have a Facebook page at Forella Kate, and that's where we post honestly more to the Facebook page than anything. And that's really become a community there of all the people that follow. So those are the different ways you can find us and stick with us.
Good. Well, today's been a heavy podcast, but if you're walking through this detour, you know someone that is. We hope that this gives you hope. And I think we have a couple things to remember in this is don't forsake your spouse through this journey of life, through your adventure. It's like we say, it's the highs, it's the lows, and it's everything. And that ribbon of grace has to run between it. Maybe you don't realize how long it would take to get to the top of the mountain you're climbing, but just know that when you reach the top, the view will be more marvelous than you can ever, ever imagine. So usually we would leave you with a little outro music and tell you to like us and on Facebook and Instagram and YouTube and all that kind of stuff. And we want you to do that. But today we want to leave you with Jeff's song, The Empty Chair. So have a great week.
It seems like every minute I've been dreaming about heaven and all the things your precious eyes now see. I stare at every picture, wishing somehow I was with you, 'cause nothing is the way it used to be. We gather at the table where you sat across from me, and I can't get used to you not being there. In that empty chair, I can almost hear you laughing and see that pretty smile, and I know that I'll be with you in just a little while. I imagine as you gather all together at the table with the King, there's an empty chair that's sitting right beside you that you have saved for me. This world seems pretty cold since the day God called you home, and we had our final hug and last goodbye. But I know that you're there waiting for another celebration, the day when we all finally arrive. We'll gather at the table with our family and our God. Oh, I just can't wait until the day I'm there. In that empty chair, I can almost hear you laughing and see that pretty smile, and I know that I'll be with you in just a little while. I imagine as you gather all together at the table with the King, there's an empty chair that's sitting right beside you that you have saved for me. My homesick heart has always longed to see the Father's face. Now heaven's even sweeter since you walked into that. See that pretty smile, and I know that I'll be with you in just a little while. I imagine as you gather all together at the table with the King, there's an empty chair that's sitting right beside you. Oh, there's an empty chair that's sitting right beside you that you have saved for.